Kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. We've been speaking about what is happening in Sudan for a couple of days now, in fact, for a couple of weeks. And as I was saying to you, you know, I suppose it's good to see that other media is starting to pick up on what is happening in Sudan, and that we are starting to get a lot more reports coming out of Sudan. We've decided to ask someone who's been watching the story himself for a couple of years now, Thembisa Fakude, who is a senior research fellow at Africa Asia Dialogues. Thembisa Fakude has been watching the story, as I said, for some time, and really is best placed to give us a sense of what exactly is happening right now in Sudan. Thembisa, thank you so much for your time. A very good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Well, the UN is saying, well, this is an atrocity. The UN is saying it's like nothing they've seen before, and the world is sleeping on it. You've been watching the story for a long time. Thembisa, and I've been asking, who stands to benefit from this war?
Well, the role of external actors at the moment, who have since entered the fray in Sudan.
Yeah.
This includes the United Arab Emirates, the Russians under the banner of the Wagner Group, and other private individuals who have since entered, particularly the gold mining in Darfur. You know that the price of gold is rich. Numbers that are unprecedented. So it's good business at the moment, and there's a huge deposit of gold, particularly in Darfur, Sudan. So those are the people that are going to be benefiting. But importantly, RSF, which is the party that's led by a gentleman known as Hemeti, is involved in hiring out soldiers of fortune. In 2015, when the war that was led by Saudi Arabia against Yemen, that the RSF soldiers were hired and paid large amounts of money to fight the Houthis in Yemen on behalf of the Saudi-led coalition against the Houthis. So for them, it's business. And they simply do not care about the people of, particularly those of Darfur. So that's the first point. But there's another element of racism in Sudan. And you have people looking like we are now, calling themselves Arabs, who are fighting and killing others, who are calling themselves Africans, who happen to be a bit of a darker complexion, particularly those that come from the eastern part of Sudan. And western part of Sudan. So that's where the challenge is. So you've got these guys who think that they deserve to control and rule the entire part of Sudan, and they continue with this very backward, bigotry, racist attitude towards the people of Darfur, and they can kill them as they wish. I mean, Sudan and many other countries, particularly in North Africa, slavery still exists. And those who are being enslaved are largely Africans. So you've got that, you know, kind of right to do as you please with those that don't look like you do or you deem as inferior. And that's what's happening at the moment. And this is why this killing has gone on for such a long time. And by the way, RSF has morphed from what used to be called Janjaweed. Janjaweed were those militias on horsebacks who used to appear in the middle of the night, shoot and kill and rape people of Darfur. So this is the same RSF led by the same person, Hemeti, who's now was appointed to be the deputy of the Sudanese Sovereign Council under the leadership of Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who's the current head of the Sudanese army. And both of them are now fighting because Burhan suggested that RSF must be incorporated into the Sudanese army. And that's where the squabble started. And that's why we find ourselves at the moment.
What do you make of the African Union's, or at least even the African Commission's, response to all of this?
Well, it's a moribund institution. It's embarrassing to even call it a representation of an African politics or countries in Africa. It has done nothing. We continue to see them doing absolutely nothing. In fact, encouraging dictatorship throughout Africa. Not long ago, we had Paul Biya, a 92-year-old, was elected and got 85% of elections. And the African Union is still to pronounce on that. Days ago in Tanzania, you had the President Hassan, who was killed, jailed, tortured his opponents, winning the elections by 97%. Again, we still have to hear from the AU condemning that. So it's a joke to even think that it will come to the rescue of the Sudanese. This has been going for a very, very long time. They've said nothing. Only now when the international media started highlighting and amplifying the conditions in Sudan, that you see them at least giving some statement of some sort. But to expect anything from the African Union is a waste of time. At least from where I sit, I've observed them, I've studied them, and there's nothing really that they can do, particularly if they are dealing with powerful, strong external actors such as United Arab Emirates, the Wagner Group and others.
The United Arab Emirates, as you point out, I mean, is quite involved here. Everybody has been mentioning that. I'm not sure how Trump sees their involvement in this. And I think he's been pretty quiet to some extent in compared to other wars that have been going on around the world.
Yes, he is, because he knows that he can't do much in this one. He's speaking about Nigeria at the moment.
Yes.
Because he happens to have interest in Nigeria. There's a lot to be gained in Nigeria in terms of
oil,
oil, but also other rare earths and new minerals that are essential in the new business of AI.
Yeah.
And for him, is a low hanging that he can go in and, you know, while pretending to be solving the problem, but he can also be extracting and stealing the minerals of those countries, particularly Nigeria. In Sudan, on the other hand, it's a very complicated conflict, which they don't have much interest in terms of economic benefit, you know, financial benefit there. But importantly, you've got an entrenched Wagner Group, which is a Russian organization, and Trump doesn't want to go and start another conflict with the Russians in Sudan, one. Number two is, you've got United Arab Emirates, that has got its own interest, and they are a very strong ally of President Donald Trump. So Trump do not want to go there and try and disturb this mission that both Russia and United Arab Emirates are currently peddling in Sudan, in terms of stealing the minerals. And I mean, the whole disturbance of politics in that country is mainly to disturb law and order, so that those that have got the wherewithal and resources to steal and plunder can continue to do so undetected. And by the time the world wakes up, they will have made enough money and they've stolen enough minerals from that country that it won't matter anymore. So Trump won't even begin to intervene in Sudan, simply because there are big powers involved, and those powers are working directly or indirectly with him.
The AU is not doing anything. The UN, all it does is just sends out statements. Who's going to stop this war, Thembisa?
Well, UN, again, is another moribund organization that will do nothing in terms of solving the problem in Sudan. The only countries that could help in solving the problem in Sudan are the Gulf countries. Qatar, for example, has got some kind of influence in Sudan, and they can try and help. But importantly, the one country that can stop this war tomorrow is United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
Because our United Arab Emirates is funding the RSF, which is a militia group that has created all of this problem. It's the same group that has killed thousands of people, not only in Darfur, in Al-Shafr at the moment. This new town not too far from Darfur where people were killed. So it's United Arab Emirates that has got the power at the moment that can stop the war by stopping to fund RSF in Sudan.
And not likely, it's not likely that they will, though.
Well, they won't. I think what has happened, though, the massacre of the past couple of days has embarrassed them, because suddenly the whole world is calling for the boycott of United Arab Emirates. And let's not forget that Dubai is part of UAE. So those are the countries that deserve to be boycotted. And it's not only in Sudan, by the way, that you have these shenanigans by the United Arab Emirates under the leadership of Mohammed bin Zayed, the leader of the UAE. In Israel, we know that they've been involved in terms of supplying critical information to Israelis to bomb Hamas. Now we know, senior Hamas officials have revealed that the United Arab Emirates provided Israel with code nations and maps of where Hamas installations were, making it easy for Israel to continue bombarding Gaza. They're the first one to normalize relations with Israel, forcing other nations, including Sudan, to normalize relations with Israel by endorsing the Abraham Accord. So this is a country that's really problematic. And by the way, they're in South Africa now, under the guise of something called DP World. They sponsor cricket. If you notice, many of the cricket stadiums, including the Wanderers, is now called DP World Stadium. Same institutions. Their main concern, of course, is to capitalize and monopolize coastlines, because they're very much into logistics, particularly maritime logistics. So they want to conquer the world by controlling the movements of maritime business. And this is why you find them in Somaliland, you find them in Somalia, you find them everywhere, where there's a coastline of significance, because that's what you want to do. But they've been extremely, extremely destructive in terms of politics, particularly in the region. If you go to Yemen, it was them who created that instability in that particular world. And now they're in Sudan, also creating the same problems. In Palestine, they've been working with one gentleman, is Mohammed Dahlan, who was their representative in that part of the world, working in Israel to continue oppressing and killing the Palestinians. So it's them that can stop this war and this problem to currently find in Sudan.
Look, thank you so much for giving us a lot of that context. Thank you. I really appreciate you giving us your time. Thembisa Pakude there is a senior research fellow at Africa Asia Dialogue, just giving us a bit more meat into what exactly is happening in Sudan. We've been asking the question, who stands to benefit from all of this in Sudan? And he's very, very generously given us a great more detail as to what exactly is happening there. I did ask you to send us voice notes and comments if you like, and you have done exactly that. And 086 000 00959, that's a number to dial, but you can also do that on voice note on 063 688 0959. Let's take a listen to some of your voice notes.
Hey, whatever this thing, yeah, budget cut, the goal of AfriForum, you know, with the Fred of Five Plus, Bala, fall crying. Our children cry all the time, also women, like it's a mess as a black child. I think it has to come to a point where we don't take this organization seriously because of their stance. You know, who must be affected? Like, Kimanga Tanzania had the advantage over the other. When you look at the goal of Zakukasi, you know, they are overcrowded itself. That's why we other children are running into these so-called Afrikaner schools. You understand? So they don't want Abarabahatli, but then we have no choice.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.